Good morning on Tuesday, July 14th, 2015. This is Brian Madden, and you are listening to a BrianMadden.com podcast. Happy Bastille Day, Jack.
Thank you. Yes, this is... Wait, did you introduce me here? This is Jack Madden here. I want to say a special warm welcome to those of you that either had to launch Safari or Chrome or re-enable Flash this morning to be able to listen to our show.
Wait, did we disable... What?
So did you see, as of last night, Mozilla disabled Flash by default? Now that there was a second and third, as of yet, unpatched zero-day vulnerability in Flash.
So did we talk about this on the show? I actually switched over to Mozilla as my browser. I switched away from Chrome. Because Chrome is getting like just too slow and bogged down, because I have like, you know, 5 windows with 30 tabs each open, and like my CPU is just being chomped constantly. Mozilla, in no way, is different.
So go on. And with Mozilla, then, like, what about your using Google apps offline and all the good Google integration and all that stuff?
Well, this is all these can of worms, because that's a whole different thing too. I started to think, maybe it's not good for me to have one company with all my information. You know, like,
we just have lots of companies have all of my information.
Yeah, yeah. And so I went to Mozilla, and I disabled Flash by default, by the way, hoping that would help. And that it's good, because since iOS does not support Flash, a lot of websites have been rewritten not to work in Flash. And a lot of websites.
Let's say a lot of websites.
Not all websites, such as BrianMadden.com, which is still probably, you know, requires Flash version 2 or newer in order to function fully.
So our podcast streaming app, as well as our chat app, are both currently Flash. But we did a quick check this morning, and Justin, our producer, informs me that they're. Ustream does have an HTML5 player that we can move over to.
Oh, cool. Now, who knows if we can embed HTML5 into our website. But the thing is, Flash, you know, a lot of websites want to use Flash, and they bug me in the Mozilla little bar saying, oh, we should use Flash, or this website wants to do it, but I always say no, and it seems to work fine. But today, they're on GitHub, like, uses Flash for some reason, and so it... It said something about extra vulnerability, and I didn't really know the details on that. But I wanted to ask you, more importantly, what was I going to say about that? Oh, the privacy. Yeah. So Mozilla, I just kept the default settings of using Bing, and I will say that Bing is for sure worse than Google search. Like, I wanted to give the benefit of the doubt and try it. Like, give it the old, you know, kind of like college try, and Bing is fine for the easy stuff. If you type wiki, space, you know, like potato chips, you can find the article on potato chips first and all that sort of thing. But really into it, I would say approximately once every few days, I actually take my search term out of Bing and paste it into Google, because I actually want to find what I'm looking for. So I feel like I gave it a shot, and Bing definitely sucks.
You know, I figure if they have everybody's information, like what are they really going to do with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's just, you know, it's just. I just wanted to see what else is out there.
Yeah, you have to draw the line somewhere, and I'm not quite wearing a tinfoil hat yet or anything.
But anyway, so the man, I'm so excited, I'm shouting. The reason you're listening, those who are, I'm at home, by the way, and Jack is at the office. So last week we did like a podcast. We went a full hour talking about like this whole enterprise mobility, like EMM, like, is it real? Do people need it? Like, you know, there's a whole industry around enterprise mobility, but like, you know, does it actually solve the problems people are trying to solve? And I don't know. I thought it was a really, really good conversation. But we talked solid for an hour. And so we just said last week, let's just stop and let's pick up next week. So today's podcast is part 2. If you haven't listened to the last podcast, was BrianMadden.com podcast number 72. So if you're listening to this and you've not listened to that one, go back one and listen to that one first, because this is the part two. So,
yeah, so our quick recap, and we started out last week with each of us sort of presenting our views of the world, your view of the world as a 20-year veteran of the desktop space, my view of the world as a mobile person. And I talked a bit about how this idea of like mobile device management itself is a fairly mature concept, and EMM is coming along with, and you know, we can see how it's being mature with stuff like Android for work. I also talked about the state of I spoke a little bit about the challenges of different types of mobile app management. But mostly we talked about the first half, like EMM up to now, and then EMM as the future. And we came to this conclusion that EMM moving forward, it's more than just managing a mobile device. It's more than just saying, I want to be able to open this document into a work application and not a personal application. It's much more than that. We discussed that it's, for lack of a better term, it's the glue that holds the new world together, this outside of Windows world, when we're mobile to apps, when we have all sorts of web and SaaS applications, and we need to use identity management and single sign-on to be able to move smoothly in between all of them and have the intelligence to bring that, to have our management be aware of the devices and the apps and all of the services. And it's the whole new world thing.
And did we cover if we talked about this, I forgot. Do people need this? And did we talk about that last week? I mean, because I'm still, I look at all this stuff and it's like, it's all cool. Like, I get it. Yeah. Like, you know, so there's different, you know, frameworks, and we don't, you know, we can manage devices and we can manage applications and they can do all that. And EMM is the glue that holds all together. But I mean, the market penetration of these products is not super high, right? I mean, like, it's still a minority. Like, I have the number like 30% in my head. I don't know if I'm making that number up. And I know it depends on if you count, you don't just want to count, numbers of customers, because, like, you know, because
right,
they'll say, oh, we have 500, like 100% of companies are using us, but it's like, yeah, they're using it for like, you know, 10% of their users or whatever.
Yeah. And well, so also there's a number that that Microsoft's Brad Anderson likes to use, is you know, think of the mobile device endpoints that are hitting up the enterprise, and of course that number is hard to estimate, but it's obviously huge, in the hundreds of millions. And then look at least his estimate of how many EMM licenses have been, or seats have been sold in these last couple of years. And the number there is like around 80 million. So between 80 million and whatever hundreds of millions of devices, obviously there's a huge gap there. We also talked last week about how there's, and we used our company, TechTarget, as an example of how there's a decent amount of mobility that can just happen almost unintentionally, because I mentioned that, okay, we have email access on our iPhones and on our Android devices, and we've been using Concur for a couple of years now, and Concur happens to have an app. And do you think the reason why our company switched over to Concur was like just because it had a great mobile app? I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was because it was cheaper or easier, yeah, or something. Yeah. But yeah, hey, it has that mobile app, and now that's like one of the enterprise mobile apps that I use. And then just look at, we've been on Salesforce for a while now, and finally now we're rolling out Box company-wide. And in the presentations to the employees, it's like, hey, by the way, here's this Box app. You can use it on your mobile device. You don't need it to be on the VPN. And all of your personal network drives are disappearing. And did we do all this because we had a big mobile strategy? No, it just sort of happened.
So And I have to imagine that's the same case. I mean, if you're saying, you know, if the data is 80 million seats of EMM sold, and who knows if that's high or low, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say, maybe it's 100 million instead of 80 million. I mean, there's numbers talking about the number of, like, people talk about the number of enterprise desktops, and they throw around the number of like 500 million. Like, there's 500 million sort of corporate and enterprise desktops in the world. And I imagine there's probably more mobile devices because a lot of users have, you know, phones and tablets and everything. But even if it's only 500 million, and even if EMM being sold is 100 million, that's like 20% best case. And it could be more like 80 million to, you know, 750 for like somewhere down by like 11 or 12%. So it's not that high.
But then, if you look at the like the examples that I was just giving, like the number of those devices that are likely at least email enabled or some other work apps being usage, it's probably
most
pretty close to all of them. Yeah. So the question at times is, okay, when does this EMM stuff come in?
Yeah, like, do we need EMM? Like I'm not arguing that we don't need mobility, but I'm saying like, do we need EMM? And it's not. And I'm not saying is EMM nice to have. Like, do we need EMM?
Yeah. So that's a good question. And we've said before that, okay, there are some companies that they need EMM because they have regulatory compliance reasons, and they were, when the iPhones came in, their first requirements were like okay, like basics, remote wipe, lock, passcode, all that stuff. And
yeah.
And so we're assuming that a lot of those companies, they've been doing EMM for a while now because, hey, it's 2015, and anybody making their employees wait all the way until 2015 after the iPhone has been out for 8 years now, that's they have to have some pretty patient employees.
For those companies who have the regulations or a strong, you know, information security department or something like that.
Yeah. So the question is, when does it become like it is nice to have? And so, like, I would make an argument that right now for us, we're like a couple more apps and we're going to get to the point where it'd be definitely nice to have, because all of a sudden, okay, we've got to have this Concur app and this Box app and the Salesforce app. And wait, is this, which Salesforce app is this? Is it because there's like the regular Salesforce app and the Salesforce One app? Which one do our salespeople need? And I don't know which one they have or which one they need.
But then the barrier for them to download and set it up is pretty easy. Like, because so TechTarget uses SCCM. And I view that, but that's, I don't know if I want to call it like, you know, the EMM of desktops.
Yeah.
Or you could say like, you know, EMM is the, you know, SCCM of mobile, whatever. But desktops are way more like difficult to get things installed and configured and all that sort of thing. Like, the apps we have on mobile are like, okay, do you need Salesforce or Salesforce One? It's like touch it, and you have it now in 12 seconds. It's not hard to like remove and install.
But still, as the number of apps increase, and as like if you start having in-house apps, and what about setting up your email? And then every time you set up your email, or every time the password changes, then you have to go and change in your phone. And yeah. I don't know about you, but I have about like 5 or 6 different devices hitting up Exchange Active Sync. So every time my password changes, I have to, it's like a big, it's a big struggle, because I have to go around to all my devices and like put them in airplane mode or something, or turn off the Wi-Fi so that they're not trying to hit up the Wi-Fi. And
the EMM wouldn't fix that, right? You still have to go to each device and change your password.
It would if I had the, like the MDM just automatically updating the Wi-Fi and Exchange profile on my device.
So
And then what about, like, say I do have to be getting on the VPN on my device for some things, and it's just like one thing and another thing. And yeah, of course mobile is a million times easier than installing a bunch of desktop apps and configuring a desktop, but it does get to a point where there's some level of convenience associated with having the EMM there.
Yeah, and I guess that's what you pay for is your what does EMM cost? Like, you hear these numbers about AirWatch bought market share, and there's people saying like, oh, they're giving it away. And you hear like people like, oh, it's like $2 a month or $6 a month or whatever. But like when you go out, and then we talked a little bit last week that, you know, most of these vendors have sort of like, what would you call it, like basic and advanced versions of their EMM suites. Almost everyone sells per user per month, right? Like, you're just kind of paying for this as a fee per month per user. It's not like it's not like classic software. You pay $300 and buy it and you own it. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and the question is, like, then once you also do your identity and access management solution, and you also do your enterprise file sync and share solution, so that's like three different things that you have, and so it's like bottom line for this new world, there's money that you have to be paying. So maybe for like those, as you start to get all those different things that enable the new mobile user, I don't know, I'm just ballparking it, maybe like each of those, you know, maybe if it's in the $8 or $10 or $12 a month range, so then you're like, I don't know, maybe $30 a month for those handful of basics for mobility.
Can you get so yeah, I can understand putting file sync and share, but if you're going on buying like Mobile Iron, you're buying like Zen Mobile, do you know where those are price wise?
Well, Zen Mobile, I'm assuming that you're buying it along with lots of other Zen app and everything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of hard to say. Yeah, I don't want to say too many other numbers because, you know, they can be variable.
I'm Googling. Notice
You're Googling, you're not binging.
I'm not binging, I'm Googling. EMM Silver, EMM Gold, EMM Platinum.
So I guess first of all, I'm wondering, like, yes, yeah, so to get all this stuff, yeah, it's going to be more than like $3 a user a month.
Oh, look at, yeah, there's, you can't even know the thing. They got a flowchart. First, select the bundle you want, silver, gold, or platinum. Then pick a license, per user or per device. Then how do you want to deploy, cloud or on-premise? Okay, that's grammatically not right. And then pick a buying option, subscription or perpetual. And then add support options, basic support or premium support. So I guess that's why they can't just say, I wish I could click through those and just like it spits out a number. Although I guess that competitors would use that against them.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear from some people on this, but yeah, like bottom line, yes, it's something that you have to pay for. But I guess what's your question or objection?
I'm just curious. Like, yeah, I wonder when it becomes worth it. So TechTarget is 700 employees, $10 a month per employee. That's $84,000 a year. So we can pay some dude to like set up everyone's phones for less than that, which is maybe what we do, I guess, because we don't use EMM. I'm just trying to understand where, you know, and I recognize, like, you know, from your standpoint, you're looking at the whole, you're looking at the industry at large and how companies use mobile devices and how they mobilize their enterprises. And EMM is like part of that. But at the end of the day, I guess whether someone uses EMM or not, like, you know, you don't really care because they still have to, like, you have to have a way to deal with your mobile users and their apps. And that could be just sending out an email that says, hey, go download Box now and log in with your directory account. But
I'm sure. Well, okay. So tell me about your, because your very earliest days, I know that before you did a lot with Citrix, you did a lot with SMS.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you had some of the same conversations in in 1997. Is that even the right year?
Yeah, 95. Yeah.
Like, and so, hey, we can, so it's 95. So like, it's like, hey, we can get this, you know, we can add another admin for $24,000 a year to go around and, you know, make sure that everyone's desktops are configured correctly. So what do we need this big, expensive, complicated SMS implementation for?
Except on that sense, I mean, like, look at Telzon. There was like 9 people in the desktop support department and our 4 on the help desk. And we had, so that was 13 people. And that was those 3 buildings in Fairlawn. Like, I don't know how many employees were there, but it was, or sorry, it was one building with like three, like they were connected. But I mean, there's, I don't know, like 1,000 users, 500 users. Like that was not that big, you know, across the street from the mall there.
Yeah.
And there's 4 on the help desk and 9 desktop support folks. And so that was like
9,
and
then, just desktop people.
Just desktop people, uh-huh. Then we had our networking people, security people, server. There's like 4 or 5 server guys, like 1 or 2 networking folks. A different guy handled the phones. And it doesn't count all the apps and all those people. But I'm talking about just like the IT infrastructure support was like 25 people probably. And granted, this 20 years ago, but they, like in that case, it was, you know, the amount of time before SMS, you know, we were walking around from desk to desk to desk, like installing, even like building a PC, like building a new user's, you know, computer was like a 4-hour process, because installing Windows, installing this, installing, sending the mail, setting up all these things, and like updating, you know, upgrading applications, applying service packs, applying hotfixes, applying, you know, all this kind of stuff. Application upgrades was like this massive spreadsheet, and you picked and you tried to do like, you know, 5 users per day, and you spent the next 4 weeks upgrading 5, like barring each user's computer for 2 hours, and, you know, clicking next, waiting for it downloading. It was very manual and like sucked big time.
I'm like, can we have like a snoring sound effect right now?
Yeah, and so this is okay. So it became like, That's where SMS and these electronic software distribution, like, you know, Altiris and you know, all these kinds of things kind of came into play, because hey, we could centralize all that.
So let's say there's a line somewhere, and like we're saying in our current example at TechTarget, like we're clearly not at that line yet where it becomes convenient enough, or where it saves enough time and effort. But there's a line somewhere that that companies cross it, then it's like, okay, yeah, it's it would be good to have this stuff to help us out. And that line, especially at companies that, if you're you know, a more security aware organization, that line will obviously be in a different place. But let's just say that. So sure, we can't define exactly where it is, but it'll be there somewhere.
Yeah.
Fair
so,
enough.
Yeah. But but I wonder if, like, do you think that we'll ever get there? Like, when these companies make an EMM software, say, oh, we got whatever it is, the market's 10%, 15%, 20% so far, and they're like, that's awesome. That means we have, you know, 80% of untapped, you know, size. Like, this, you know, because I'm sure they believe their total addressable market is 100% of devices that plug into corporate, you know, data.
Well, so sorry, I'm jumping on your question there, but I'm assuming the place that you were going, like, is that going to get to 100% sometime? And I think the answer is that if we look at EMM more than just getting this app to this phone and getting this person's email set up, but as EMM, as it's the way that we manage the end user world post PC.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, when do more and more of our apps become SaaS, more and more apps become web apps, mobile apps, Windows 10 apps? When do our laptops go over to be getting managed by MDM instead of by SCCM?
Yeah. Okay, and because if you look at EMM as, like, the Mickey Mouse EMM, just MM, the Mickey Mouse EMM is like what you like said, like, yeah, okay, it's sort of the classic MDM, like I'm installing these apps, I'm like remote wiping, I'm
here's your email profile.
And you can also say like, yeah, so your apps only talk to each other and can't leak data out. Okay, that's all fine. But EMM, like, it does that today, and that's gotten us 20% market share. And yeah, we can talk about, well, does it do it today? There's more things coming and everything we talked about last time. But, you know, and then there's going to be some delay when the features get there, and then it takes delay for people to buy. But let's say that can get us to 30%. Like the basic kind of EMM today, which is device management and app, you know, app wrapping, wrangling, keeping separate personal, dual persona, as you say, and everything. So let's say that gives us a 30%. And I don't know, like, and I'm curious about, you know, is there something that gets us to the next, you know, towards 100, or is it to the point where, as you say, it's more like at that point, it's still we're managing, you know, quote unquote mobile devices and quote unquote, I just recycled that GIF last week, desktop devices as two separate things. And so now I guess we are saying, okay, at what point is SCCM and, you know, EMM the same product? And that's not just slapping them into a suite, because what you need to do to manage a classic Windows desktop in really is not the same kind of the way you do it in technology-wise is just not the same as the way you manage a mobile device.
So I think it depends on how much new world stuff that you're doing. And by new world stuff, I mean mobile devices, Windows 10, with universal Windows apps and not classic Windows apps, being on the web and having single sign-on to SaaS applications, as well as what I'm on, like all of this stuff that's not, as you're doing more and more stuff that's not classic Windows applications, I view EMM as it's the way that you manage the new world.
So, and that's interesting, I guess, because you can look at, like, everything's an API now. And I got that from Dan Cordingly, who's Teradici's CEO, when he was talking about the Teradici pervasive computing platform, which I wrote about yesterday, where they're releasing, you know, their core product as an API and SDK. And he said this is the way the world's going. Like, people don't want to buy products. They don't hardly even want to buy solutions. Like, they want to buy an API and, like, custom build it together themselves. And if you look at everything that's happening with the standardization in interfaces with virtualization, infrastructure management, and, like, AWS and all this kind of stuff, and, like, look at how you can, you know, hook Azure or AWS and this here and that there and run the service and that, and they're talking to each other, and there's all the standards and that kind of stuff. So this just becomes part of that. So I could see in that sense that, you know, everything you're doing, like I said, there are the new apps. There's the SaaS apps, web apps. You've got, you know, single sign-on, identity management, data management, personality, and that's all just sort of these sort of APIs you're hooking together. And
your network looks a lot different, because the idea of the idea of bringing in some device and putting an entire device on the network, that just makes no sense. It makes sense for old Windows, but it doesn't make sense for everything else. So everything else in the new world, it's all per app VPN. And then look at, you know, what some of the networking companies are doing inside the network, that, like, just because that app gets on a network doesn't mean that it can go wherever it wants. It's like, hey, thanks to your software-defined networking controls, it can only hit up the one resource that it needs to.
That's, yeah, right.
So that's another part of it, too. Yeah. And then also the look at, when do we ask for a second factor and when not, and based on taking into account all sorts of different context and input, and then suddenly, you know, things like Target, you know, are a lot less of a risk.
Yeah, and Target came in via Windows, by the way, so on the Citrix over VPN.
And so it's just like the you see looking forward, it's like, okay, yeah, like I see this is just the way things are now, and my Windows desktops that are managed as like complete Windows desktops are kind of a rarity, and everything else it's either virtualized or reform factored or something or other.
So this is really
and when you think about how much time we're spending in the new world already, like I would love it if my company had had like a modern an Okta or a Centrify or whatever now.
And so it's interesting because so in that sense, you know, this is not just about mobile devices. I mean, well, I guess it sort of is because you could say laptop. I mean, all devices nowadays are kind of mobile. But when we talk about mobile devices today, it was sort of a euphemism for like iOS, Android, and so this
and the modern web world where you're signing on to HTML5 like SaaS applications.
Yeah,
and basically those, anything that's not the classic Windows application world.
Yeah. So so you can see how there's EMM is not like the way of the future. I'm writing this down. It's just part of it. You know, like you wouldn't say, okay, so the future of managing all this is EMM. It's like, not really. That's like saying the future of managing, that's like saying the future of IT is SDNs, like software-defined networking. Like, well, yeah, software-defined networking, these intelligent micro VPNs, or even, as you say, more so than that, it's not even an app-level VPN. It's like even what you're doing once you get through the VPN is like inspected and, all that kind of stuff. It's sort of all of these together, and like part of that is going to have to be, there's going to have to be like a way to sort of set all these policies and apply policies and just keep track of who's where and what they're allowed to do, not allowed to do. And like, is that EMM? Yes, no, who cares?
It's just
the way it is.
It's the post PC era.
Yeah. Call it what you want. But honestly, though, I'd say it's not the post PC era. I'm writing these down because it's the post PC era is where we are now, right? Like the post PC era is the post PC era is looking at mobile devices and treating them like managing them in the same way that we sort of manage PCs and everything, except we manage them in new ways with newer technologies. So we got MDM and MAM and EMM, and we can manage them better. But what we're talking about here is even one step beyond that, and saying it's like everything that everything that you just talked about, like with authentication and where your stuff is and all hooking together and these networking has changed and storage and data, that's even post where we are now. That's like, that is the new, like, you know, IT brain or whatever.
Yeah. And I think there's a dividing line somewhere where when your desktop admins are spending more time administering that new world than changing around GPOs.
But the desktop admin, like, what the F is a desktop admin?
Your desktop admin is now like the EMM admin and the identity and access management admin, and the making sure the user's account gets provisioned to SaaS correctly, because not that many, not all the SaaS vendors support like automatic account provisioning yet.
So where we're going with this is, there's in this future IT brain, I don't know what, this amazing technically super world this future world, which we're not there, but we're seeing that, everything we're doing today will evolve into this kind of future world, including, EMM, and it's just sort of all going in that direction. And so that really does get us back to a point where we are like boxing the desktop in a legacy, because the Windows desktop just in no way is compatible with this new world. And so that's where we can use technologies such as, you know, remoting technologies like, you know, VDI and ZenApp and these kinds of technologies that can take our desktop box, and I don't mean the physical box, I'm saying like the logical box around the desktop, you know, they can box the desktop and then deliver it, you know, into this new world and then have some of the same sensitivities around, you know, who and where and how you're accessing and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It turns the desktop into something that's compatible with the new world.
Yeah. Which is kind of how we talked about Citrix back, you know, 15 years ago, how it like webifies back when web apps were all the rage. You know, yeah. Citrix web app webifies your desktop apps.
Makes them into web 2.0 apps.
Oh, this is 10 years before that term came out. .netifies.
Now that the web 2.0 term is what, 10 years old now or
Yeah, I'm
like
talking
that?
From I'm talking about this was what I wrote in the last chapter of my MetaFrame book in 2001.
See, I'm thinking one of the slides that I always used to use for my presentations was 2006, the Time Magazine Person of the Year, when they put a shiny reflective mirror on the cover of it.
Mm-hmm. And that was like how long ago that was now?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, check this out though. If I go back to the blog archives, October 2002.
I know that you have Rise of the Employee Owned PC articles from 2006, 2007, 2008, maybe.
Yeah, but this I'm talking about like, God, here's one from, this article is from February of 2001. But I've got articles on here that are like, here it is. It's called The Future of Citrix in a .NET World. This article from January 14th, 2003. Holy moly.
Yes. So are we there yet?
Well, my point, but it's kind of funny because honestly, like, it's widely used, this paper, let's see, fully analyzed, let's see, or Microsoft's .NET technology, we need to score, but I'm talking about here how .NET applications, there's XML web services and .NET client devices and servers, development tools, drag and drop, deployment, blah, blah, blah. Man.
But this whole conversation, I think, so we're talking about how this is the new world, and this is why I think Windows 10 is so important, because Windows 10 is that way to pivot into the new world.
And Windows 10 boxes on the micro level, like what we're talking about in the larger level, right? Like, because it boxes classic Windows apps, you know, kind of like partitions them within Windows 10. Much in the same way, like within your laptop, much in the same way that these things need to be sort of partitioned within the whole enterprise. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess our conclusion now is hail the new world.
Well, yeah, it'll be awesome. I mean, and if you look at where
done.
Everything, yeah, but how do we get there? You know? And more like the thing for you and me, like, we're IT engineers. Like, we're not building this new world. Like, you and I are along for the ride, you know? And most of the people who listen to this podcast are like enterprise IT folks. And yes, they are the ones who maybe will start consuming these APIs and like writing some custom, you know, code to like some PowerShells or Python or whatever to like glue some things together and hook up their enterprises, and you know, that's all fine. But they're not building, you know, whatever. I don't even know what these things are. There's something about that runs like they're not built like they're just buying access to Azure and AWS and buying products to put on them and like gluing them all together. They're not building this new world. So my question is, you know, we can agree that this new world will be a thing and it'll be awesome, but it's like 10 years away. So what does the IT pro do today to prepare? Like, what do they have to do today? And that can sort of tie back to, like, you know, because, like, on the one hand, you don't want to just, oh, I'm going to go buy EMM today because that's going to, you know, help me understand the future more. So it's like, yeah, let me spend, you know, $10,000 a month to understand the future more in 7 years.
But steps like that can be part of it. And like I was saying, there are logical points where those various steps start making sense. And just like one at a time, and then, hey, 10 years from now, there you are.
Yeah. 10 years from now, and Bob's your uncle. So,
like, at some point it's like it does make sense to have a real single sign-on solution. And
mm-hmm. And it's interesting because that's not, like I said, this is bigger than EMM, because like EMM is part of this, or what is today EMM will grow to be part of this. But yeah, it makes sense to have a proper identity and access management solution, and something where you talk about, like, knowing the context of, like, when you need two-factor authentication and when you don't, and that sort of applies across devices and across applications, and, you know, it sort of ties into the greater system. And maybe we, like those two-factor authentication things, like, we know that, hey, you authenticated physically from New York, and now you're authenticating from London, and it's only 4 hours later, like, something's not
and
right.
And the Concorde hasn't flown for 10 years.
Right, yeah.
And, well, but also look at, so last month, VMware, they announced their next generation identity and access management suite that's, it's AirWatch aware now, essentially. This is...
what's the thing called? That's
VMware Identity Manager. It's in the... So, as a matter of fact, we will be having a conversation with Noah Wasmer about this on Thursday.
Oh, like, coming up in a few days.
Yeah, yeah. Because we have the video of him talking about Horizon Mobile, or talking about Horizon App Manager in 2010.
Which even that now is, like, you know, 5 years ago.
So that was the VMware example. Microsoft's Enterprise Mobility Suite has all of the identity management components. The vendors that don't have their own identity and access management suites, of course, talk about the ways that they can integrate and, you know, have open APIs from one platform to the other and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So you could argue that like, hey, this is coming to, it's almost like, hey, this is a part of EMM now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said, and EMM is part of it, and it's just sort of, I don't know how to describe it. I'm looking at, like, how, I don't know, like, people always use the auto industry or something, like, with cars, and how before you used to have all these discrete systems deployed together in special ways, and now you have, like, the CAN bus, which is based on RJ45 cables, connectors. And so now you can have, like, they all plug into everything else, and they just all sort of work and understand each other, and there's, like, standards and all that sort of thing. And so now it's, like, you know, your car's, I don't know, remote start system is still a remote start system, but it's, like, you know, made stronger because it doesn't have to have its own keyless entry authentication, because that's done with a different system that plugs into the CAN bus and just sends a signal. And I don't know if that's a good analogy, but there's something, it's all, like, they all become part of each other, sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
So back to these traditional, so the desktop is in a box, and that's like the future of the Windows desktop is a box. And I'm saying that, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's the proverbial box, like, not physically, right? But I'm saying, like, you sort of, like, slice off and partition, Like, it is, it's like, I don't know. It's like letting your kids drink in your basement. You know, it's like, well, if they're going to drink and screw each other, then I'm rather have them do it in my basement where I took away their keys and they're not getting in real trouble versus not doing it out in the world. So I like throw all them together, like all the classic Windows apps that need to work and need quote unquote full access. Jeez, there I am again, to the system and all this kind of stuff. We put them into we put them into their own box, and then we pull out as intelligently as we can safe views into that box, which we can do with you know, HDX, Remote FX, piece of RP, possibly some light cutting and pasting, you know, like this kind of stuff, and maybe some light, you know, peripheral USB audio integration, that sort of thing. But like, really, these things are running in their own. They've been quarantined, and they're off, like, you know, kind of doing their own thing. And then we just sort of, to the extent we can, let them into this new world. But it seems like the future of Windows classic applications is a box.
And I feel like we could probably go back 10 years, or sorry, like 5 years, and there's like Riform presentations that maybe you had given that are pretty much saying that.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. This article I found from 2003 has a lot of amazing future projections, which are so, so wrong. And not only are they wrong, I read them out, they're just dumb. I'm so glad.
Like
my gift to the world is I never have actually operated in a position of where I was able to affect anything that mattered. So luckily,
there was something of yours that I read sometime in the last few week, and I think it was a little bit more recent than it was, like more mid-2000s. And it's like, when all the desktop images are streamed on the demand from the cloud. And
oh, that one. I remember that. Yeah, I had a chart, right? Like a flow chart, right? With like bright colors and showing how, like we'll be able to stream our OS images right out of the cloud.
Yeah, that'll be the future.
Yeah. Huh. It is interesting though, because the future of Windows in a box does allow for interesting, like, you know, we talked about this before, like as iPads and stuff get more and more strong, how soon is it until we have like a micro Windows instance that can run the bare minimums the Windows desktop application needs on a mobile device? And like VMware has this other project they announced, I think like last week or something, where it was like a Linux VM image for like SaaS. So for like, it was just that they built like the smallest, most efficient image for like, I don't know, like Docker, controlled stuff on AWS or something like that. And so it's like the lightest bare minimum image you need to like run like web services.
Right.
And I could see something like that where there's like a Windows, like the bare minimum Windows you need to run that, you know, who knows how Apple allows this and all this kind of stuff. But like in terms of like raw, like power, I mean, I'm sure that the iPad has enough that could run like, I mean, I could probably run Windows 2000 with Office 2000 on an iPad. You know, I'm sure that'd be fine.
This is an interesting thing to look into. To look into farther to see what the state of that is, because we've seen videos of Android tablets booting Windows for years now. So, I mean, let's think more about this, and maybe this is for some future articles, but we need to think about where is that actually going to make sense, and by the time we do all jump through all those hoops, is it easier to use an app refactoring thing? And because you're going to have to refactor the UI anyway, and like what use cases are we going to have where it has to be that Windows app running locally on that iPad?
Yeah, and so I wrote an article about this back like in, 2.5 years ago.
Is all of that just like so much trouble that for like in terms of the actual use cases that we find to actually do that, it's not that many?
Yeah. This article is interesting. It's an interesting comment. Because that's the first comment on this article. It's like, are you talking about this for like the corporate world or for home users?
Like, it seems like a lot of trouble.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's if Windows is just in a box, I can run that box anywhere, including on my mobile device. By the way, the open source project that allows you to run Windows VM on a jailbroken phone is called Box, B-O-C-H-S. That's funny. It's a highly portable open source x86 PC emulator. It emulates Intel x86 CPU, IO devices, and a BIOS. It can be compiled to run on many different things, including iOS.
Well, there we go.
I can see Windows classic applications, you know, being part of this because they're going to be around forever, and they are running in a box like wherever. And I guess that's kind of where we're going right now. So I guess that's the key. So let's bring this back to Windows 10. So Windows 10 has like half and half, and I've been using Windows 10 now in the betas. Like I declare myself a Microsoft. What do they call themselves? I'm in the club, you know.
Insider.
Insider. Yes, thank you. I should put that on my LinkedIn, like Windows Insider. and that's yeah, I'm a Windows Insider officially. So you know, I've been using Windows 10 for since whenever that like big preview when it started coming out to people, like what, about maybe 2 months ago. It's good. I mean, the new Windows apps and the old Windows apps, I like that they are, you know, they run side by side enough, and they don't, like, it's not like Windows 8 where you are like painfully switching from one to the other. So that's good.
I think that the thing is though, for since you have you have the old Windows apps running there locally, and like the bottom line is old Windows apps running locally on that device are going to need, they'll need management.
Right, but what's interesting though now
because
is
it's
that's what I'm saying.
It's still not quite as Tim Mangan. We had his article on Project Centennial a while ago, which is the project to take old Windows apps into the new world. And in his blog post, he covers like there are still a lot of questions, and it's not going to be magical, and it will take a lot of work.
Yeah, well, right, and that's where it always goes down to the fact that what app creators, the people who wrote these old Windows apps, what they allow the Windows apps to do, just fundamentally, it's like a different time, like how different like laws change. You know, it's like the laws of what you were allowed to do were way more promiscuous back then, and so people were doing kind of whatever they wanted. And now we're trying to modernize the laws, and people are like, "Hey, man, that's fine, but I still gotta be like, you know, whatever some crazy laws. I still need to be able to like shoot someone if they take my horse." By the way, it's very hard to find an analogy of a blue law that is not horribly politically incorrect.
I have to be able to drink on a Sunday morning, or
I can understand you want to be modernized, but I still want to like, you know, hang you if I see you drinking on Sunday. but it's the. My point, I guess, is that, yeah, the reason this is going to be difficult is because what these apps do, it's not so easy just to say, just don't let the app do that. Like, that's fundamentally how it works, and the people who wrote it are dead, and, you know, you can't just, like, take that away. So the ultimate, it's going to have to be putting these things in a box.
But that's what we have remote desktops for.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
I say put them in a box. It can be a local box. So, like, Windows 10 does a good job of putting them in a box. And Windows 10 does a good job of not making it look like they're in a box, but they are in a box. And so, yes, you need an SCCM-type thing to manage the Windows that's in the box, but hopefully you can get the Windows that's not in the box on your Windows 10 to start to do more of these hooking into EMM and your data as a service and your identity as a service and your apps as a service and all these other kinds of things.
So we're, what are we, like 11 days out from the, what day is the Windows 10 release?
Yeah, 24th, was it?
Are we going to have a party?
Well, when's Briform? Is it like the day after Briform or something?
Are they doing the thing this time where like you can they'll send you the like the decorations and the kit and like the party favors?
Oh my gosh! And then you have exactly like one, you know, old white woman, middle aged, you know, Asian male, like younger African American female. Like you got like the perfect, you know, Native
American stock photo diversity.
Yeah. Like having their party, like excited about Windows 7 launch. Okay, so let me see, launch Windows 10 launch. I'm Googling that. Oh, it's 29th. So it's way far away.
So we have time to plan our party.
Yeah, it's just too bad it's not a Briform forum. all right, if I do Windows 10 launch party. Windows 10 launch party. Oh my gosh, it does autocomplete. A global upgrade party. Here's the forecast. it's a far bigger deal than Windows 8. Okay, well, everything we're talking about was... It'll celebrate all over at Microsoft stores.
So can we go? Let's plan on going to the Microsoft store at the mall.
There is a Microsoft store at the mall, Justin. This is a Wednesday, right? So, hey, Justin, you got 15 days to figure out how we can live stream video from a location. All right.
Oh, okay. Well, so, we'll do the whole thing live on location from the store.
Yeah. Like with our Macs. Maybe you can just do it with the iPhone, because aren't there apps like on the phone, like where you can live stream from your phone? So maybe.
Yeah, there's Ustream apps.
So maybe between that and we just get like a little like nicer quality microphone to add onto it or something like that. I'm serious. Let's do this from. let's do this thing from the store and just see, like, oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, there's a Charms bar. Oh, no. I thought I was reading about something that was going to happen at the party. Like, the Charms bar is in Windows 10, you know? Like, that's the actual thing that has a little, like...
Yeah, there should be a bar called the Charms bar.
Yeah, instead of the Genius bar, they have the Charms bar. Yeah. We can make our own Charms bar. Oh my gosh, Justin, clear your calendar.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. All right. We have Briform in between. Oh, yeah, Briform. Like, we have Briform coming up if anyone still hasn't hung up on this podcast and still listening at this point.
Well, so bottom line is, our point is that Windows 10 will be one of the important milestones to this new world.
Yeah, we're just getting there. We're getting there. Because the new world can be cool, but it's not going to work with any of our old stuff. And the best way to work with the old stuff in the new world is going to be to quarantine it, and just access it through very specific known safe ways, such as, you know, HDX, remote FX, piece of IP, you know, and the quarantine can be on our desktop as much as it can be in the cloud, in a data center somewhere. Like, it doesn't really matter. There's pros and cons for each. It's that, but the reality is that is going to be quarantined.
So in that new world, so I guess, so we're looking at the, we're coming up on our hour here. So I'll say for this new world, like if you look at EMM now and all of the areas that it's expanding into and all of the things that it's becoming, like, this is the way that we manage the new world.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's not. What we do with EMM today is not how we're going to manage the new world. It's not like EMM is the future. It is that the future is different than the way it is now, and EMM is the first steps towards what that future is going to be like. And it will probably be more EMM-like than SCCM-like. But we're not saying you got to use EMM, like EMM is the future of management, but it's sort of like that's kind of along the right veins, though.
There we have it.
Okay, so this is good. Again, we took today. This is like, you want to talk about like what you want to look at what we are going to focus on over the next 5 to 10 years, and you want to look at like what IT professionals have to focus on over the next 5 to 10 years. Like, this is it.
And also, if you want the experience of like hanging around and hearing a conversation that we would actually have on our own.
Yeah, right. This is literally, I forgot sort of we're doing a podcast. This is like when Jack and I talk on the phone, this is how it is. And we just like catch up. So, all right, cool. So, I guess I'm hanging up now. We got a team meeting that starts 1 minute ago. Is Mariah still traveling? She is, right?
So thank you to Justin for, thank you for to Justin for producing the podcast. Mariah, our team leader, Gabe is back from vacation, but unpacking and going through his email right now. Thank you, Brian, for hosting the podcast.
Thank you, Jack, for closing.
I'm Jack Madden. Have a good afternoon, San Francisco.
Thank you.